I'm Matthew Smith, Vermont Edition producer, and I wanted to let you know that the podcast you're about to listen to has been edited for clarity and brevity. Thanks for listening and enjoy.
This is Vermont Edition. I'm Jane Lindholm. When big box retail chain Walmart made a play to build a store in St. Albans, Vermont, more than 20 years ago, it was not well received by local residents. A headline in the Washington Post from 1994, written by Malcolm Gladwell, no less, screams, "Walmart encounters a wall of resistance in Vermont." In 2009, the Boston Globe headline was the 16-year war. In fact, by the time it was all over, the fight had lasted for two decades. The largest Walmart in Vermont at the time opened its doors in 2013. In the meantime, the debate had gotten more nuanced. Some people still loathed the idea of this massive retailer building a huge store in what used to be a local cornfield. But others said they welcomed the affordable prices and easy shopping options. But still, the fight over the St. Albans Walmart was huge. The case went to the state Supreme Court, and people lined up on one side or the other, fighting vehemently to prevent or encourage the corporation's plans. Same for the dollar stores that cropped up about a decade ago now. So why wasn't there similar outrage when Vermont's first Target store was announced last year? In many Vermont circles, people almost threw a party. They were so excited. Governor Scott was at the ribbon cutting at the new store at the University Mall in South Burlington last month, and the euphoria caught even him by surprise. So are Target's employment practices so much better, its products that much more appealing? Something else? Vermonters seem to loathe big box stores, except when we don't. What is that all about? That's our topic for today, and I am ready for you listeners, so bring it on. Are we just hypocrites? Is this about social class? Give me your ideas, your perspectives. You can call 800-639-2211. That's 1-800-639-2211. Or post a note on the Vermont Edition page at vpr.net. We've been getting lots of comments from people, and there's a very healthy discussion going on Reddit about this. Milburn Creek says, as a consumer, I shop where I can find the goods I'm looking for at a price I'm able to afford. That means I probably head out to Keene or Claremont once a week to purchase items at Home Depot or Runnings or Staples. They have the wider selection I'm looking for, and I save on sales tax. It is absurd that I can't find a ream of paper for my printer anywhere near Springfield. I'm not against big box stores at all. I think every store, whether mom and pop or corporate big box, has a right to compete. Let consumers vote with their dollars. And G-Shop says, I have some general concerns about the corporate policies of many big box stores and the draining effect they have on local economies. That said, I come from a relatively poor family, and many of my friends are also poor. They don't make shopping decisions based on ethics, but instead on prices. Unfortunately, the same corporate policies that enable big box stores to be a drain on the local economies also allow them to offer lower prices. I do shop at big box stores and online, but I attempt to limit myself to using them for products I can only obtain from them. And we're joined today by Noelle McKay, who's spent 16 years working in land management and community development in Vermont. She's worked for nonprofits and downtowns, as well as for the state and the city of Burlington on community and economic development. Noelle McKay, nice to have you back on the show.
Nice to be here.
And also by Jane Kolodinsky, chair of UVM's Community Development and Applied Economics Department. It's nice to have you back on the program as well.
Thank you.
So, Jane Kolodinsky, what do you think? Are we hypocrites? What's going on here with our differing ideas depending on the retail outlet? Are we making rational, sensible decisions, or are we just, you know, I don't know, voting with our hearts in some weird way?
I don't think so. And I'm an economist, so I'm going to talk about rational people. The profile of the shoppers of Walmart versus Target are very different, number one. Number two, the formats in the stores are very different, Walmart being 10 times as large as Target.
In general, right?
Yes.
Because there are, you know, there are differing sizes of Walmart stores too, obviously.
Yes, there are. The third is that Walmart has tended to do new development, building large stores in, let's just say, not downtown, whereas Target, especially the one in Vermont, was coming into a mall, and we all know that malls are on decline. So there are differences. One size does not fit all for discount, and these two discount chains are very, very different.
But in Vermont, I think there are now six Walmarts, and at least half of them were built into already existing retail locations, not like the St. Albans one. The St. Albans one was a little bit different in some ways because it was this massive superstore. It was built outside of town. I think if you read back in the stories, you know, the The store and the corporation sent a truck around St. Albans saying, come here, it's better here, shop out of town. And so there was some real animosity, whereas in places like Rutland, the debate was to say, can we bring it into the center? Can we draw people into town to then shop elsewhere in town? So it's not necessarily that cut and dry that Walmart is always building these big super centers outside of town and trying to, you know, cut away the profits of local stores, and Target is not, right? I mean, we just don't even have any other Target stores to compare it to.
Right. And that's not exactly what I said about infiltrating and putting other stores out of business, although that was a big comment about Walmart in Vermont. I think also if you look at the difference between Walmart and Target, you have Walmart, I'm going to call the commodity of discount stores. So you go into Walmart and you find white paper plates, whereas Target has a totally different marketing model. In fact, in the next few years, you will see Target being able to adapt to local markets and stocking their stores with, I'm in air quotes here, design plates, for example, that fit the needs of the market. So Target is developing more of a niche market, where I would say Walmart is the commodity discount store.
Noelle McKay, how do you come in on this, thinking from your hat here as a community developer and dealing with zoning? We've talked to you before about things like form-based code, which, you know, make eyes glaze over until people realize how this affects their actual lives.
Right. And I think the difference, you know, if you look at the Rutland store, I think from the time they wanted to go into Rutland to the time they were built, it was 2 years.
So it was talking about Walmart here.
Walmart in Rutland. It was a very different kind of discussion and community discussion than, say, the one in St. Albans. And I think that does kind of go to some of the values that Vermonters have. We really value our downtowns and villages. You know, that's part of our state planning goals, is compact villages surrounded by working lands. And I think there was a concern that we weren't using land efficiently. And I think that's part of the discussion here. As Jane said, Target came into an empty store that was already built. It had infrastructure. It's in South Burlington's. What they want to have is their new city center. It's walkable. There's bus, you know, there's bus service there as well, and there's existing infrastructure. So I think that's a very different kind of land use than building it in a cornfield. And I think that's why you had a difference in terms of the community coming out and raising concerns there.
Noelle McKay, do you see any sort of social status or social class coming into play here? And I'll ask Jane as well, of course. But, you know, Target is a low-cost choice, but as Jane Kolodinsky was just saying, they market really differently. They're a designer brands, and they're, you know, these relatively low-cost but feeling more exclusive kind of things that you can get at Target. And so it seems to me that there's a lot of this sort of upper middle class acceptance of Target, of Target, and not so much of Walmart, even if the prices are fairly similar. Do you see that?
I think there is a different perception, especially I know years ago when I was working on this issue with Smart Growth Vermont. And I think part, you've seen an evolution. You know, people were saying that, you know, different big box stores pay their staff differently. Benefits were different, full-time versus part-time. And I think that also played in a lot of the decisions people were making to support one big box over the other. And I think now they're all starting, you know, I know Walmart is looking at, you know, changing some of their hiring practices, and what they're doing in terms of energy efficiency has really changed as well. So I think you're starting to see them answer what they're hearing in the market, which is consumers that are looking for stores and shopping decisions that are priced, but they're also looking for others in terms of the triple bottom line, how it works with the community, how it looks at the environment, and how it treats its, how these stores treat their staff as well.
Getting more comments here from Reddit. HistoryCat95 says, Costco pays a living wage and appears to treat their workers well, so I will go out of my way to shop at Costco. Home Depot and Lowe's have the hard-to-find items and better prices. Plus, they send me good coupons. I have not and will not set foot in a Walmart because I don't want to encourage their corporate welfare system. Another Reddit user says, my family only shops at big box stores if there's absolutely no other option. The exception is Walmart, which we never go to ever. We've heard a lot about how Walmart treats its workers and how much welfare those workers receive due to the low wages Walmart pays. I'm sure Target gets its stuff from the same slave labor factories in China as every other big box store, but we've heard comparatively little about Target. I imagine a lot of that is just effective marketing instead of any real difference. Targets are also generally cleaner and nicer looking, which I admit is not a substantive difference or representative of how Target treats its workers or its effect on the world.
So, Professor Kolodinsky, you know, what about this idea of how your class status, your social status impacts how you feel about different chain stores?
Well, I did some homework before I came here, and I found an industry report. So this is not what I feel or I believe. This is from Cantor's Industry Reports, where the average Walmart shopper tends to be older and earning just about median income, whereas the average Target shopper tends to be a millennial and tends to earn a little more in terms of their annual income. So there are some demographic differences. I think what we're seeing in stores is that Walmart is reacting, and I'm going to say rather slowly, to this Fight for 15 or a livable wage, full-time work, treating their female workers better in the long run. It happens. Sometimes it happens quickly. Oreos got trans fat at overnight, and Walmart's taken about 20 years. But they are finally catching up to what the market is beginning to demand.
And we see things like Amazon, which, you know, we haven't talked about online retailers yet, but certainly Amazon, you know, recently making that decision to turn on a dime and have a $15 minimum wage for all of its employees. Online, and this is, you know, from the Walmart site, so that's where the stats are coming from, but they say the average wage in Vermont is $13.79 an hour, which is pretty close to the $15 minimum wage that many people are calling for. Does that surprise you, Professor Kolodinsky?
An average is just that. And, it, sometimes the average Joe or Jane isn't representing anyone. So you have to look at the spectrum and look at the low, the high, and the median. So $13.59 doesn't really tell me much.
And let's go to Tim, who's calling in from Waterville. Hi, Tim. You're on the air.
Hi. I just want to say a few things. First of all, I had worked with former Senator John Finn in St. Albans. At the time, the Walmart debacle was going on. And the conversation at that time was not no Walmart. It was bring Walmart to St. Albans City.
Right, into the city, not outside of the city.
Right, exactly. So that was the first thing. The second thing I want to say is that these big box stores tend to be real predators and put out the local realtor. Take Arthur's in Morrisville, take Harry's, which is going back a long way, Harry's on the Berrymont Billiard Road. And the last thing I would say is these predatory big box stores are really good at sneaking in the back door, as they did in Johnson just recently with the Dollar General, by sneaking in under the Act 250 permit and putting up a store here in Johnson. So, you know, it's really important to shop locally, to support local merchants and keep our local economy booming.
Well, Tim, thanks for the call. I appreciate hearing that. And Noel McKay, these dollar stores are another interesting example here, because my understanding of why so many dollar stores about a decade ago and within the last couple of years were able to come into Vermont communities was partly because their size is really different than the size of a typical Walmart or a typical Target. So they are able to slide in under some different zoning laws than some of these other stores were. So how does zoning come into play here when communities are trying to figure out what kind of stores, what kind of franchises they want?
Well, this is why it's so important for communities. All of our communities do town plans, and it's really important to put all the pieces together of what your goals are and be really clear in both your town plans and your zoning of what you want to see. It helps the community know what they're going to get in terms of a development, and it also helps developers know how they have to develop. So we have seen in some of our communities that they're requiring our Dollar Generals to look very different than kind of just a single story. Some communities have, you know, they need to be brick, they need to have a sidewalk, they need to be two stories to really fit into the fabric of their communities and be very seamless, and also to be able to be reused in the future. And being proactive in the planning, I think, really helps a community make sure that they're meeting their goals, and it's not a surprise to anybody when something is built.
We got a note from Brad who says, look, if Target had built in Williston, they still would have been loved. It's a perception of Target being a better company than Walmart, not that they went into an empty store at the mall. And for people who aren't familiar with Williston, this is a really good example of how different kinds of zoning can create different kind of communities. Williston has a big area that is basically just big box retail stores, many of them, and big parking lots. And Noel McKay, you and I have talked about this before, but a really different model for how to bring stores into a community and what that looks like from other communities where there might be a different kind of planning and zoning that doesn't allow for that same paved parking lots, lots of big box stores kind of situation. And did you want to say something, Noel?
Yeah, I was going to say that, but Williston has changed over the years their zoning for that area. So after the first few big boxes came in, they said, you know, this isn't really how we want our community to look. So you will see that they're starting to infill. They're doing trees, sidewalks, and some of the new development along Williston Road is the kind of the two-story look with the parking behind. And they're also looking at a mix of housing, whether it's condos, single-family homes in and around that area, as they start to look at that as their kind of community center where they're doing most of their mixed-use infill development. So they've also evolved their regulations as they've seen, you know, that really wasn't the look and feel that they wanted, and they thought they could be more efficient in how they use the land as well. So that's also changed over time.
I want to bring in a comment here that we got from Christian in Groton. And as we go to a break, this is a good thing to leave you thinking about and see if listeners, you want to call in and respond, because it's a kind of a provocative idea here. So Christian says, a large portion of the people in Vermont who consider themselves native Vermonters, a troubling term in its own right, or old-timers who purport to value and want to hold on to the traditional Vermont way of life and often resist changes to their own town, the people who view flatlanders like me with an amount of suspicion because of what they think I want to bring into their way of life, those are the people who have to take a majority share of responsibility for giving away what Vermont was and the way of life in Vermont that made it so unique and so desirable for people like me. I came here wanting to be a part of Vermont that most people think exists when they think of Vermont. And what I've felt is that I'm among the people fighting against the tide of that Vermont disappearing because so much of Vermont loves its Walmart or Applebee's or Shaw's or Hannaford's or whatever else you can find just like it everywhere else in this country. Big box stores and their counterparts in other commercial areas have done more to hasten the demise of Vermont's identity and way of living than anything else, because that's exactly what they aim to do. Homogenize places and people in order to guarantee markets and profitability. And Vermonters have only themselves to blame for allowing it to happen. It's not likely there's a way to reverse course, and that's disheartening. Professor Kolodinsky, what do you think of Christian's comment I read just before the break, that Christian says it's people who say they want to preserve a Vermont way of life who are also the ones saying yes to big box stores?
Well, that does appear to be what's happened. We did a study called Transportation in Your Life. Now, it's rather old now. It's the data are 8 years old, and it was published in 2013. But when we look at people who that what they say is important and then the availability of those amenities, Vermonters really wanted a grocery store, but they said that they value the most their natural surroundings, their safety. Things like clothing and restaurants were very low on their importance scale. And those are the things that were less available in Vermont, the grocery stores, the restaurant, and the clothing stores. So maybe it's that, you know, we deserve to have everything just like everyone else, and we don't have it, so therefore let it come.
Do you think there's a nuance there that either maybe you teased out in the survey or that could be teased out, though, about size and scale? You know, if I say I need to have access to a grocery store, I might be thinking, yeah, I need to get my groceries every day for my family or every week. But I'm not thinking a superstore. I'm thinking, you know, little local grocery store. And then if what comes in is a superstore, that may not be what I had in mind or envisioned when I said I really want a grocery store.
I think that you're absolutely right. But once it's there, am I going to boycott it? Probably not. It's there now. There's nothing I can do about it, so I may as well enjoy it.
Noel McKay, what do you think?
I think it's a little more complex than that, and I think people do want to be able to have access to you know, inexpensive groceries and clothes. We hear it used to be the underwear. We want to have a place where we can buy cheap underwear is what we heard a lot. And I do think people do shop with their with their dollars. And so maybe, if you know, I'm not thinking about big box, but I'm thinking a lot about the franchise stores and restaurants. You know, we don't have McDonald's in a lot of our downtowns because there's other local options that people choose instead to go to lunch or dinner. And so I think that people do choose with their dollars. And I do think size and scale matters. And I will have to say that I think I disagree a little bit with Christian in that I think there's a lot of other things that make Vermont special in terms of community and how we work together. And I think if you go to planning commission meetings across the state, people disagree, but they really do care about their communities, and they're trying to find that right match so people can have access to groceries, but also have a size and scale. And I think that's something that we need to continue to cultivate here in Vermont.
So I totally agree with that, Noelle. In our particular study, it was the natural surroundings, family, friends, neighbors, recreation, that really were the most important thing to Vermonters.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting, too. I think sentiment can change over time. I remember I was a little kid growing up in Middlebury, Vermont in the 80s, and a McDonald's came to the outside of town. And that McDonald's is still there. But it was an event, and there were a lot of kids in my elementary school for whom going to McDonald's once a week as a family dinner out was a really big deal. And, you know, I don't know if that's true for families these days, or, you know, if there's so many more options that that doesn't seem like a big thing. But when I was a kid, you know, for a lot of families, that was a night out that was cheap. It felt mm-hmm. special. And, you know, I think that the sentiment changes over time with how we decide we feel about corporations, how we decide we feel about what they've done in our communities. But, you know, I think about that a lot, how big a deal it was. Professor Kolodinsky?
Well, I think if you look over time, there's a wave of things that come and go. Kmart is basically gone. Sears is on the demise. And so you can see the rise and fall of a variety of different retail options in a community. And that changes with over time with consumer sentiment and consumer demand.
Let's go to Bob, who's calling in from Proctor. Hi, Bob. What are your thoughts?
Hi there. For those of you in the Burlington area, Proctor is right next to Rutland. I'm gonna sound like a bit of a contrarian, because the situation in Rutland, which was over 20 years ago, the Kmart decided to move to the new, now dying mall, leaving a box that was empty in downtown Rutland. And the city basically said, you can either go into that store or we'll fight you to death going down on Route 7. And it is the anchor for commerce. I work downtown. It's the anchor for commerce downtown, and I see it. It's, I guess I would rather see it than being ringed by Dollar General stores, which puts many little stores out of business, it seems to me. But that's my view. I think it's a place for people of modest means to shop. I see people walking there from the adjoining neighborhood to shop, and we should be careful about being too, shall I say, elitist.
Yeah, Bob, I appreciate your thoughts. Thanks for sharing that. Let me get another call in here. David is on the line with us from St. Johnsbury. David, where do you fall on this?
Well, 30 years ago in St. Johnsbury, the 30 years is a guess, I don't remember for sure, we opposed the coming of Walmart to St. Johnsbury. There was a rundown area of town they were going to level and build their big box. Now, 30 years later, all the storefronts in St. Johnsbury are empty. The place is dying. St. Johnsbury is going to go away, and we all shop in Littleton at the big box stores over there.
Over the border in New Hampshire?
Over the border in New Hampshire.
David, thanks for your call. You bring up another important aspect here, too, of if one community says no to bigger retail and another nearby community says yes, does that drain from that other community that was trying to preserve something and, in effect, lose what they were trying to preserve in the first place? Noel McKay, does that happen?
Yeah, we have seen that, and that's why I agree with Bob from Proctor that, you know, having the downtown Rutland is really good for downtown, and it provides a lot of it brings people into town, so there's, you know, other places that they can go and get all of their shopping done in one spot. And so that's really what we want to see. It's not about what it's for us. For me, it's always been about how you develop the land. And we have seen that drain when you have a big box store come in and neighboring communities and downtowns have been impacted. And I know there's a lot of people here in Vermont that care about our downtowns and do a lot of work for that, whether it's, you know, help with planning, help with various grants, and also looking at, you know, how can we bring in new businesses to existing buildings that are there and empty.
Well, I think that the St. Albans store is actually a success story, but it was because people fought. So part of that negotiated agreement was that there would be an investment in downtown. And they were very thoughtful about how the downtown St. Albans would respond to the Walmart. And mm-hmm. they're thriving right now. That community is a success story.
Well, it's interesting. It seems like you're both saying the same thing in interesting ways because it takes a lot of planning. This is not an accidental way that this happened in any of these communities. And so thinking not only about what your zoning or what your regulations are going to be in terms of a preventative sense, but then how you're going to design around something that's coming in takes a lot of work.
And resources.
Right.
So let's go to Molly, who's on the line with us from Jericho. Molly, you have some thoughts?
So a little while back you asked for people who had a preference one way or the other with Walmart or Target. And I actually refused to shop at Walmart because of the greed of the Walton family and for Walmart refusing to pay their employees a livable wage, and also in many cases refusing to give them enough hours so that they can have medical insurance. So that's my preference.
Yeah, Molly, thanks. It sounds like you've thought about it. I appreciate hearing your perspective on how you decide where to shop and how. Let's hear as well from Beth in Bennington. Beth, your perspective?
Hi. So recently we renovated our kitchen, and we have a Home Depot in Bennington, and we were making several trips, it felt like daily, to Home Depot because everything was there. You know, you could pick up hinges and paint at the same time, but we started going to our local paint store, Different Strokes, and to our local tile store for those specialty items. And the difference in customer service, being able to speak with the store owners and, you know, being able to spend an hour with someone who was an expert was a huge difference. The other difference that I see working for a nonprofit is that local business owners are much more invested in the community. They donate to fundraisers instead of telling you that you have to, you know, apply to corporate. They're just much more invested.
Beth, thanks for your thoughts on that. So, Noelle McKay, I mean, is that one way that local stores can compete, is on customer services, on, you know, really being there for their communities in a very different way to try to draw customers away and not having price be the only thing that people are shopping on?
Absolutely. I really agree with Beth. You know, the stores, the locally owned stores, they do give to nonprofits. They give their time. I know one of the stores that I shop at has a food drive every year, also supports the local animal shelter, as well as great customer service, really make it a great shopping experience and someone I want to support, you know, in the long term. And so I think that is definitely part of the reasons people shop locally.
We're talking today about big box and how we feel about big box stores. So part of this is sort of our own psychology around our shopping habits and how we decide and rationalize our choices and also what factors into our choices about how, when, and where we shop. And we're also thinking about some of the more concrete examples of how big box retail or the absence of big box retail has affected Vermont communities. If you'd like to weigh in, you can share a note on the Vermont Edition page at vpr.net, or you can call 1-800-639-2211. Catherine wrote in on Facebook saying, Christian isn't wrong. Now, Christian had been the listener who said it's often the people who decry new people coming in because he thinks they'll change the landscape, that often people who want to keep Vermont the same are the ones who are welcoming these big box retail stores, which Christian says really change the fabric of communities. And Catherine writes, Christian isn't wrong. The issue, as I see it as an old-time Vermonter, is that many old-time Vermonters are land rich rich and cash poor and shop where they have to pay the least possible as a result. I'm lucky enough to live in Cambridge, a village with a vibrant local market. But that's also partly because we're a half hour from anywhere with a big grocery store. And Katie writes, I worked at Target for 5 years in Florida while in college. We worked hard for our money without a huge wage, but after 2 years of part-time service, I received a full benefits package. As a non-traditional student, that was great. That said, moving to Vermont helped me appreciate a strong local economy and the immense value of keeping dollars within the community. Let's hear from Susan, who's on the line with us from Moortown. Susan, where do you fall on this spectrum?
Hi. I guess I wanted to weigh in and first say that I do appreciate my local economy, and I do, when I can, find the things that I need. I do try to shop locally unless there's a huge cost difference. But I would say that, you know, I'm middle class and I have three kids, and I'm trying to make my dollars go as far as they can. So I do shop at Walmart. And I got to say, all these people that are complaining that these big box stores don't pay a livable wage, I live in the Mad River Valley, and I don't think that there are a lot of local businesses who pay their employees much more than minimum wage, to be honest, because that's what they can afford to do. So I don't really think that that argument holds much water, in my opinion.
Susan, thanks for your calls. Jane Kolodinsky, what about that? I mean, you know, there are a lot of different ways that people say, I'm making this choice because X, but, you know, haven't necessarily compared it to, for example, you know, as we were just hearing from Susan, the local wages at the local mom and pop shops.
Well, that's a complicated question. And it takes me back to about 20 years when I spoke at the Vermont Association for Recyclers. And the question there, or the objective there, was to say, Americans, Vermonters, who have what have you, have to get rid of their desire for so much stuff. So maybe if the local good is a little more expensive, maybe it is of higher quality and it'll last longer, but I don't have as much of all of that stuff. So that's one thing. The second thing is our economy depends on people spending dollars in the marketplace. So smart businesses will actually buy into, I believe, into the higher minimum wage so that their workers can live, work, and consume in their own communities. And so when you undercut wages to your employees, you're basically going on a downward spiral of keeping the community intact.
Professor Kolodinsky, what about the elephant in the room here that we haven't been talking about? And that is that, you know, many of the consumer choices that people are making have nothing to do with how big the chain is. They're buying online. They're bypassing altogether local jobs and their local communities.
Absolutely. And online buying is taking over. And now we see people are buying groceries online, Whole Foods and Amazon and so on. So that's going to be the next wave. And even big box stores might not be able to survive in the long run if everyone shops online.
Aren't we seeing that as well in some of the reasons, not all, but some of the reasons why so many malls across America are really suffering? Because people don't need to go to the mall in the same way they used to.
People do not need to go to the mall.
So, Noelle McKay, one of the things, though, that we can talk about here that is not just about whether you like one big box store or another is not everything has to be a judgment call, right? I mean, for you, in thinking about land planning and land management and zoning, it's not necessarily a good versus evil or a black and white in every situation. So how should we be thinking about these decisions?
It's putting all those pieces together for what you value in your community. And you talked about these big box stores maybe not surviving, and we're seeing that, right? So at Taft's Corners, you've seen, I think, Toys R Us go out. So that's in Williston, right. And so what are we going to do with that store? It's really hard to reuse these big box stores. And that's why thinking about what we develop, how we develop, and where we develop is really important. So we can think of lifespan. You know, a lot of our downtowns have been here for hundreds of years. Those buildings were banks or operas, and you know, now they're housing apartments or theaters. And that's really what we need to be thinking about is long-term, how can we have quality buildings that can be used in different ways?
And are Vermonters and Vermont communities, are we thinking about that strategically? I mean, we've had now many years of having what some might call infiltration in, or, you know, development in ways that communities weren't expecting or didn't want. So are communities thinking differently now?
Absolutely. I know that many towns, you know, every 5 to 8 years, people are towns are redoing their plans. Burlington is doing theirs right now. And the Department of Housing and Community Development, the staff there have done manuals to help communities think through, so they're not really big, complicated tomes, but really readable and accessible to the community, and finding new ways to get community members involved in their planning, because we really want to be proactive and not reactive in our town planning.
And Professor Kolodinsky, what do you think? Wrapping this all up in a nice holiday bow for us here.
Well, I think the bottom line is that Vermonters have forever valued community, and consumers and individuals and citizens do have a say, but they have to participate in their civic government.
So how should they be doing that besides just showing up at town meeting day?
Well, go to planning meetings. Go to the discussions when communities are deciding on what their next 5 or 10 year plan will be. Be involved in your community, and you can help shape your community.
Jane Kolodinsky is the chair of UVM's Community Development and Applied Economics Department. Thanks very much for being on the program today.
Thanks for having me.
Noelle McKay has spent much of her career working in land management and community development in Vermont. Noelle, it's nice to talk with you today, too.
Thanks so much for having me.
And listeners, I appreciate you going here with us, thinking about the psychology of big box retail, and we'd love to hear more of your perspective. So feel free to share it at vpr.net. Just click on today's Vermont edition. Maybe we can do a mailbag on this next week.